Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season 2 of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me season 2 is out now from Lemonada Media.
Hello, hello, hello. I'm your Andy Warhol, hostess with the mostest, Michael Munoz. And welcome to In Yo Mouth!
In Yo Mouth.
I'm the queen of food who's always in the mood. To lick it right, lick it good, show you how to
look. Oh, God, that's good.
I want to know what you eat from the streets to the sheets. So open wide, honey.
I'm coming.
In Yo Mouth.
Got the goosebumps.
Hey there, and welcome back, folks. Once again, I'm your hostess with the mostest, Munoz. And here we are. So here we are. Oh, my goodness. It is still something like 90-some-odd days till my 40th birthday. And we are just trucking along. I mean, what more is there to say about it that I haven't said already? Actually, you know what I wanted to talk about really quick? I want to talk about all the love you all show me out there really quick. I'm really not a numbers guy, like tracking my numbers. I kind of just do this. This podcast is a lot of a labor of love, and I just put it out and let it be most of the time. And I went back really quick. I was like, you know what? Let me just take a look at these numbers. And they're doing like, y'all are listening. And it's really, really amazing. And the growth and just you all supporting me and the love you show me out there is really, really amazing and awesome. And it's just a joy to sit here and to give a platform to other people and to share other people's stories, our stories. It's just a really amazing ride. And it's really amazing to see the growth and the acceptance of this pod. So thank you out there so much. Shameless plug, while you're listening, if you haven't already, please scroll down really quick and just hit that 1-star, 2-star, 3-star, 5-star, whatever stars, leave a review. You know what? Even if it's a bad review, I hate it so much, but I can't stop listening. I'll take it at this point because, I mean, it's only upwards from here, isn't it? Yeah, and that's my PSA moment of the day. I am so excited for today's episode because I have the one, the only, yes, y'all, another gay foodie superstar. What can I say? The one, the only, Billy Green with me. Say hi, Billy.
Hi.
Wow, you sound so excited to be here. Billy, for those of you who don't know out there, and I'm pretty sure you do, Billy Green is the man behind the Instagram Wit and Vinegar. But Billy is also a photographer and recipe developer, right? And so he lives in Fresno, California, so it's the morning for him. So everybody just give him a break. How are you?
I'm doing good. Still waking up a little bit and trying to just like be present here with everything else that's going on in my house right now. So I'm doing good though.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Well, good morning and thank you for being here and giving me time out of your very, very busy schedule.
Yeah, no problem. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. So in the grand tradition of the In Yo Mouth podcast, I need to wish you happy National Mulled Cider Day.
Mulled cider as in like Like, no, it doesn't have to be alcoholic, right?
I mean, I would prefer it to be, but it doesn't have to be.
Interesting. It's too hot. Is it cold in New York right now?
Yes, it is too. It is cold. We're having a heat wave. It was like low 60s for about a good week and a half, 2 weeks, and now we like hit 80 again. But we're getting cold again. Like fall is upon us. I broke out the sweaters, the wrap sweaters. You know, the ponchos are out. Mm-hmm. The fall fashions are here, and you know what? I'm here for a little bit of mulled cider. I've already been apple picking.
Oh, we have a fire share, so that's not happening for me anytime soon. But I live in the Central Valley, so we've got like all of the like produce you could imagine, like at any point in time. So that's like, that's always really nice to sort of have at our fingertips. But
does it get cold in Fresno?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. So we have like everybody, I think everybody just always assumes that like California is like the same sort of climate throughout the whole thing. Because people just automatically assume that like LA is like the benchmark for everything. But much like San Francisco.
Much like the Kardashians, right?
Right. Yeah.
And people are very wrong.
Right. So yeah, it's like LA is sunny a lot during the year. They do get, it gets kind of cold in LA though, like during the winter. Definitely chills down. But like Fresno, yeah, we definitely we get super cold. It doesn't snow here because we're not a high enough elevation, but I grew up just north of here near Yosemite, and we used to get snow every couple of years, and it would be like snowstorms for like 3 or 4 days.
Oh, I love the snow. We haven't had snow in like 2 years, I think. Like I live for a New York blizzard. I don't care what you say out there in your mouth, listeners. I don't care that it gets dirty and slushy. I live for it. I live for a New York blizzard.
Yeah, I miss it. I haven't had like a snow day in the longest time. Ever since I moved out from that area, like I've lived areas where it just doesn't snow. So,
yeah, the only thing that sucks about it is that Billy doesn't know me. We just met. Billy has agreed to come and play with me on this big gay podcast, listeners out there. But I live in 120 square feet in Times Square. I say it every episode, right? The listeners are over it. But that's the only thing that sucks during like a blizzard that I don't have anybody to like cuddle up with, you know? But back to the mulled cider. I live for a mulled cider. I can only have maybe like one or two, right? Before it gets too hot. But I'm here for mulled cider.
Yeah. Yeah. I enjoy a nice mulled anything. When it's cold, when it cools down here, like that's definitely like an option for us. Either wine or cider is like always a great thing to like sort of partake in, whether or not it's alcoholic. I feel like cider, you know, you could enjoy a little bit more if it's not alcoholic, maybe, but.
Oh, really? Or maybe I just have a penchant for the liqueur.
Yeah. Yeah. You could also do like hard cider too.
Oh, yeah, like a beer, and that might be interesting, like a little yeasty hard cider, mulled cider. Mm-hmm. Or are we just talking like mulling the hard cider itself?
I don't know. If it's sparkling, if it's like a carbonated situation, I guess it would have to be to have the alcohol in it, then I guess you wouldn't heat that up. But you could do like some regular like cider and then hard cider mixed together.
Yeah.
That's always possible.
Well, if you're listening and you want to try it for us, we are here for that. But moving right along to this day in gay history, and it's the end of Hispanic Heritage Month at that too. In 2008, Ecuador legalizes same-sex civil unions with the passage of its new constitution. Wow. Yay!
That was earlier than us, wasn't it?
Yeah, right, I guess. So 2008, I don't remember when we passed ours now. There's been so many history factoids on and off this pod that I've like ingested that I'm just
Well, and also, like, I think it was a big state thing before it was, like, a federal thing, too. Like, we had Prop 8 in 2009 in California, I think it was.
Yes. Yes. That feels right to me.
Yeah.
That feels right. Well, I loved a little good news because, as we all know, the news itself is just a shitstorm or firestorm or whatever you want to call it. And, you know, we've just had to shut it off. But a little bit about you. What made you, we have a lot in common or some in common here. What made you want to begin Wit and Vinegar?
It was just something where, like, I was just really bored in school, like in college. I was sort of taking photo classes and graphic design classes at the same time. And I minored in in journalism. So I was sort of, all three of those things were sort of coming together to a point where I was like, oh, you know what? Like, I could, blogs back then were like nothing what they are now, not even close. Nobody made money off of them. Like, you just did it for fun. And so I was like, yeah, like, why don't I try? Like, I had bought a new camera for school, but the classes that I was taking were like, I couldn't use that camera because it was like a, like I had to use like an analog, like film camera for the class. So I had a digital camera I wanted to use. I had some lights that I wanted to play with. And so I just was like, well, this would be a great way for me to sort of figure out photography, but then also, you know, work with food, which I had done since I was like a little kid.
But where did the penchant for the food come from?
I don't know. I've just always enjoyed it. My parents can both cook pretty well. But it was always kind of the same thing. You know, it was like very like middle America, like lower middle class white food. And so it was just like always, you know, some form of like hamburger helper or something like that, which is great. Like, I will still partake in those things, even to this day, like every once in a while. But I just got to a point where, like, I think it was, I don't know, I was just always fascinated by food. We also did not have the internet when I was a kid. So I, like, that's one thing where you have more time on your hands. And I actually remember there's like a very specific memory where I would watch Food Network like all the time. And I remember Ina Garten making cabbage, and my dad would always make cabbage, but he would either like steam it or boil it, which is like disgusting. I mean, there's like so many other ways you could cook cabbage, and why choose that route? And he would always make that for us, and we just always have to eat it because that was like the vegetable on our plate. And I remember watching her, and she was like sauteing it. She like cut it in like thin strips and like sauteed it with like a bunch of butter and like all this other stuff. And I was like, oh, that like looks really good. And so I made it one night for us to like have with like our dinner. And I was like, this is so much better. Like, why are we not eating this? Like, why are you making me eat steamed cabbage when there's this option, you know, available? And my dad was like, oh yeah, your grandma used to make that for me, you know, when I was a kid. And I was like, okay, well, why haven't we had it? Because I don't like, and I think it was like sort of from there, I was kind of just like, oh, there's like other things out there, you know, like when you didn't have the internet and the food realm in which we sort of live in today, growing up, we had, you know, it was like PBS and Food Network really were truly like the options for food shows. And so, yeah, I took a cooking class in like seventh grade. And I mean, we didn't really learn a ton in that class, but it sort of took off from there a little bit. And I started cooking much, much more during high school. My parents were like divorced when I was like really little. So my parents were essentially single parents in that way, where like they didn't have somebody to make the food at home while like one of them's working or, you know, whatever else. So I would be the one to make dinner a lot of times. You know, my dad would be like, can you look in the freezer and see what we have like to put together? Can, you know, I can't do dinner. I have to work late today, or I have to do whatever. So it sort of evolved from that. And I took an actual like ROTC, like culinary arts class in high school, my senior year, and really sort of fell in love with it. And sort of just went from there to see like what would happen. And I couldn't pursue any sort of career in food because my teacher was very adamant about not taking culinary arts. she's like, don't go to culinary school. Like, if you want a career in food, you should do either like food nutrition or food scientist, so that you have like a foundation and a 4-year degree that you can go off of, so that in case it doesn't work out, there's other options you can use your degree for. So I was like not science savvy enough at the time for food science. Like, I was like, I'm not doing that. So I just kind of went in like other directions and somehow still fell into it.
Yeah, that's really amazing. I love that. I love these little the little history moment of getting to know you. And we actually have more in common than I thought we did. But you bring up a really interesting fact that I want to go back to, that pre-internet, pre-interweb, even when I had like my first AOL account in 1996, 97, right? What did that do for us? Nothing, but cause us angst. But we as like kids, right? Or tweens or teenagers or however you want to label it, had to find ways to entertain ourselves or to learn. And so that's kind of the way I started cooking too, in the sense of, you know, I wanted cake one day. So I went to the grocery store by myself, bought a box cake and learned how to make a cake. And then from there, it went to the joy of cooking, right? Because that was in my mom's house. And then growing up in a Puerto Rican family, lower middle class, right? My mom had her staples too. Delicious, delicious. But wanting to expand that palate and being like, what else is out there? Starting to watch things like Graham Kerr, you know, The Galloping Gourmet, or Julia Child, or, you know, those old, or even when Food Network started, it was just Emeril, right? And then came Rachel Ray, right?
It was a bunch of just like, I mean, it was like literally just like white people. And then I also remember it being, there was a few other people on there that are actually really, Sarah Moulton was one of them. Martin Yan Can Cook.
Yeah. Oh, Yan Can Cook.
He was like kind
remember
of like.
Remember that?
Yeah. He was like kind of like the first sort of Asian sort of food person that I saw. I think he also had a show on PBS.
Yes. I forgot about. Shout out to you out there if you're listening, and you're probably not. Yeah, but it was that. And from that experience for myself, kind of like parallel to yours in 2009, 2010, and that's kind of when the recession started and whatnot. I found myself stuck in my mom's house, right, with no theater gigs, nothing, watching an expanded Food Network and not seeing myself represented on there, you know, Latino, queer, like my voice wasn't represented. And having longing, I should say, for the old shows like Graham Kerr that had a little bit more pizzazz to them, that had a little bit more body to them, because at that time those shows were very quiet and very beautiful, right? No shade to Food Network at all, but like there was it, like the show dynamic had changed, and I was like, I could do this, but do this better. And I also started a blog back then that did pretty well, that no longer exists. but on remember Blogspot? Hello, nobody was making money. Nobody was.
No.
We were just throwing darts into this thing we call the internet.
Yeah, it was crazy, and then you would see like one person do like a sponsored post with like Silk or something in like 2010. You're like, whoa, that's crazy. Like, they're making money off of this because, you know, at the same time, what I used to photograph back then and the amount that I would put into what I do was nothing even close to what I do now. So it took a different bank account back then than it does now to create
God.
I do. But
it's night and day. And y'all out there, Billy is speaking the truth. Because as you all know, I recently during quarantine had a blog meltdown, because a lot of my old posts were still up in just on my site itself. And I took it all down because the photos, the photos were terrible. It was almost like going back and reading an old diary. And I was like, none of this works anymore.
Yeah.
Like, this is like, the recipes are still good, but I'm trying to like reformat and look at it again and try to like, you know, and blogging, you have to be so niche these days that, like, to start a blog, you have to be, you know, a leather wearing daddy who only cooks with fruit and micro, you know, hydroponically right. grown microorganisms. You have to be so niche market to for your like blog to get right. into that blogging sphere yeah. these yeah. days.
Yeah, I think it's just, especially with, I think it's a social media aspect that's helping with that. Anybody can technically start a blog today, and you actually could probably make more money if you weren't super niche. If you just went into it and you didn't put a face on your blog and you were just like, okay, cool, let's focus on SEO. Let's do all this other stuff. Let's build something from that. I've come across so many blogs and websites. I'm like, I don't know who the fuck this person is. It's like some, you know, person from like the Midwest who just literally sits there all day and like really basic recipes, SEO, works on all this stuff. And like, they probably make a ton of money every year doing that just from traffic.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and kudos to you because I'm not making that money here.
Right. Well, and then it's like, but it is the opposite because I can look at someone's site and go like, okay, so this is how much like traffic they have. Like they're making a lot of money, like a very livable wage. But then you go to like their Instagram and they'll have like 2,000 followers. So the lack, I think, with sponsorships and working with brands and stuff like that nowadays, the huge like sort of lack of personality is an issue where if you're not someone that people want to like, not necessarily like, be friends with, but like have that sort of charisma when it comes to that kind of thing, people aren't going to listen to you as much. People aren't going to trust you as much. And brands want someone who can actually sell their thing. So
yeah, and that's a great, great point because like I said at the beginning of this podcast, you know, I've been numbers obsessed before. I have been just like, how do you get these numbers, right? And I was like, I don't want to be that guy because then it takes the passion, it takes the life out of it and the project, whatever I'm working on, and myself. And seeing things grow, it's attached to who I am and my personality and what I'm doing, much like how your success is attached to you because you do things in a really fun, colorful way, almost like gay minimalistic. I want to put you in a box for the listener because they can't see you, but I don't want to put you in a box at the same time because what you do is so unique and so really, really pretty, and your color stories are really pretty, and how you post, it's just it's really eye-catching, and like
I
think that attributes to who you are and your personality, because nobody out there, except for maybe one person who has a very similar aesthetic to yours that I just found out is related to you, is doing what you do.
Right, right. Yeah, I've shot like that for years now. And I mean, this, it's crazy, like not this year, I think because of COVID, but last year was like my busiest year that I had with partnerships and working with brands, content creation for other brands. And I think it's something finally where people are like, oh, we don't want like the same thing that we've always had.
And no shade to the cheese pullers out there, but like the cheese pull pizza Instagrams these days are a dime a dozen, right?
Right. Yeah.
They all have upwards of like 80,000 followers. Kudos mm-hmm. to you. But it's cheese pull pizza, mac right. and cheeseburgers, cheese yeah. pull pizza. Like there's a formula to it.
Right. And I think brands do want nowadays too, they kind of, a lot of brands are also willing to experiment a little bit more with budget where they'll be like, yeah, this person does shoot like a little different, a little weirder than maybe like what we would normally do. But like, why don't we just see if it works? You know, like, let's see if it sticks and let's try it. And so I think that's been like a huge part of it too. But yeah, it's been crazy that like, I just kept doing what I was doing because that's what I enjoyed and I didn't want to try to do something else. And it's starting to finally pay off, which is great.
Yeah. And In Your Mouth listeners, you probably have seen some of Billy's sponsored, like the things he's done for brands out there because I saw your smile brand partnership. And I was like, oh my God, that was you. I saw that everywhere. I love that you worked with Harry and David because Harry and David is such is such a unique brand that, and I was thinking about this before we got on the pod, that it's when I think of Harry and David, and no shade to Harry and David, because I actually love some Harry and David, that I think of our parents, you know, like it's very generational. And for as much as I love it, I don't necessarily, it's not necessarily a go-to for like, oh, here's my friend Billy. Let me send him a thank you for coming on the pod. Right. Like, they're not a go-to as much as like when I pass them in the mall, I'm like, ooh, can we stop at Harry and David? I need some like chocolate.
Right. Yeah. It's very much like, and I think for them, for that campaign, it was very driven for like older millennials. So me and, I think that was what they were like trying to gear their stuff towards. And it's really fascinating because whenever I work on a campaign with a brand, they always send over like mood boards, and it's never anything like what I shoot. So I always, like every single time, have to reiterate like, hey, this is, I don't shoot like this. I don't do lifestyle stuff. I don't do, you know, this or that. I'm just letting you know, I'm not reshooting anything for you. So like, this is what you're going to get. Is that okay? And like, they're like, every time they're like, oh yeah, sorry, like we just, this is kind of for like other people that we have who kind of shoot that way already, you know, like so just ignore that. And it's like, okay, well, that's great.
Yeah, and but that's a testament to you too, that you're not compromising what you do or who you are just for some bucks in the bank, you know.
Right.
Like, this is what I do, this is how it's gonna go. And you either like it or you don't like it. And what I do is really, really good and has made me successful. You know, you have a cookbook out, right? Which we'll get to and plug, honey. And all of that. But like, it's a testament to who you are and staying true to yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's also like really important, especially now, because like you said, there are so many accounts. And it's not just food accounts. It's all kinds of accounts that are a dime a dozen. So you have to find a way to stand out. And then also on top of that, give people a reason to like further invest in you and your brand and what you create for companies or, you know, other accounts, whatever it is.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree to that. But I want to put a quick pin in this very interesting moment that we are having to take you to my favorite part and the audience's favorite part of the pod, a little something, Billy, we like to call food news update. Food news.
Ooh, honey, you ain't ready,
girl. Spill the tea.
News update.
Keurig has partnered with Jonathan Adler to create the most stylish coffee maker.
Yeah, it's cute. I saw it today at Target.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, this is cute.
Now, this is something else we have in common. Where I've read, you know, on the interwebs that you're a big coffee lover.
Right? Yeah.
And I am a big coffee lover, too. So this article was hand-chosen just by me for you. Thank you, Delish.com. Not a sponsor. Are you, well, first and foremost, as a coffee lover, do you have one of these machines? Do you own one of these machines, Keurig or other? Because, and how do you feel about them?
I think they're good. I mean, I drink a lot of coffee, so I can't use those because I would just like spend so much money on stuff. So, I just use a Technoform, like they're like this like Swedish coffee thing.
A Technoform.
I think that's what they're called. I don't know.
Oh my goodness. Don't, Billy, do not. I'm looking up Technoform right now, but
I hope that's not what it is.
I do not need another coffee apparatus.
No, Technoform with a V. So I was close. And they're called Mocha Masters, but they're like these like really kind of cool looking coffee makers. But I did that for myself like 2 years ago because I was always just buying like the really shitty cheap coffee makers.
Wait a minute, is this like a fancy pour over coffee maker? Like
no, I think it's supposed to sort of replicate pour over, but it does a very accurate job of heating the temperature of the water to a certain thing and whatever else. The amount of coffee that I drink, like I have already paid for that thing like, you know, twice over because I've had it now for like 3 years. I did a poll on Instagram asking like, hey, I need a drip coffee maker because I drink so much coffee. Like, what should I get? And this was like the overwhelming response from like everyone. Ooh. And it was, and just like, I have one.
She's not cheap, honey. But
if, no, but you, you just, I bought like, it during, it was like Black Friday or like Christmas sale sort of thing. So I got like 20% off on it.
All right. I
but
love it.
Yeah, that's what I use. But I do also own an espresso machine, but that's because I worked with them like 3 years ago.
Yeah, I also, I mean, I have a French press. I have an Italian mocha, even though we call it in Puerto Rico, una greca. I have a stovetop percolator. I have an espresso machine. I have an AeroPress.
Yeah.
And once again, I live in 120 square feet. So I mm-hmm. have a lot of ways to make coffee in the house. But yeah. I just thought this article was cute because, you know, in the coffee game, you know, Keurig is trying to keep up with things like Nespresso and whatnot. And Keurig has a new platform called Brew the Love Collaboration. And it partners with prominent brand fans and rolls out these limited collection, like tiny coffee brewers. They're, for those of you out there, they're like these, they're like an espresso machine. It's a pod brewer. And mm-hmm. Jonathan Adler has this cute, like white and blue one, right? And I figured Jonathan Adler and Keurig, because everything at that Jonathan Adler store is like $800 or more. Yeah, I was yeah. like, who's out there buying an $800 Keurig? But they're only $100, but still, you know, I was like, yeah. Oh, cute.
Yeah, it's cute. I saw it the other day at Target.
Oh, all right. So it looks like Billy and I are here for this. Good for you, Jonathan Adler.
Get right? these coins.
Make your money, honey, even during a pandemic. Tostitos has new guacamole flavored chips, so each bite packs an avocado punch.
Okay.
That face.
There's these, well, I'm trying to think like if that's, I guess it's new for Tostitos, but there are these chips that are called like guaca chips. Have you ever had those?
Yes, I have.
They've been around for a very long time. They were around when I was like in college.
And I want your opinion on mm-hmm. guacamole flavored things that aren't guacamole.
I mean,
you
it's
understand
not gonna taste,
what I'm trying getting at.
Yeah, here. It's not. Yeah, it's not going to taste like guacamole. Like you know, sometimes when you get those like Lay's flavored chips, and it's like it'll be something where it'll be like taco flavor or whatever, and they somehow like make it taste like there's like shredded lettuce in the chip, and it's like the weirdest. It's like the weirdest thing. But with guacamole, it's like you really aren't ever going to get that. Because avocados have sort of a very specific flavor, but that's sort of masked when you make guacamole, I guess.
Yeah, that it's like, I mean, it's just so hard to, I would imagine it's just so hard to like get an like avocado flavor. And that's like the whole point of having guacamole is the avocado.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and as once again, as I read on the interwebs, you know, and the bathroom stalls, that you are a very large guacamole fan.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, I'll eat it with like everything. I think being in California too, we have like great access to those types of things. So, avocado is like something we have all the time. So it's like,
and I'm sure it helps that your husband is of a Latin nature.
Yeah.
Like specifically Mexican Chicano.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah, we've always got, I mean, we'll have guacamole on like, obviously like tacos or with chips, but like we'll have it on like hot dogs. We'll have it on like everything.
I mean, why not?
Yeah. Yeah.
Why not? Well, you know what? I'm excited for a Tostitos guac chip. Why not? You know, maybe if you do like the Pringles stack, and this is not sponsored by any of these people, but the Pringles stack, you do like the hint of lime chip and the avocado chip.
Okay.
Right?
Okay. Yeah.
You see?
Yes,
you see where
I can
I'm
see
going
that. Yeah. Yeah, I like that. Yeah. Right? Yeah. Their hint of lime chips are actually really good.
I mean, I don't know anybody who doesn't love a hint of lime.
Yeah.
Like Tostitos chip. So yeah. It looks like we're here for this. Good job, Tostitos. Guy Fieri paid tribute to Chef Carl Ruiz on the anniversary of his death by asking fans to tip generously. Did you see this?
No.
So Chef Carl Ruiz, suddenly and very unfortunately passed away last year. And he was a huge influence on the food community. And he just, it was all love for, like, you know, street food and basic foods and, like, just really, really good food. And so Guy Fieri and a ton of other people I saw on the internet, in the Chef Ryan Duffy, my friends over at the Ate It app, big Carl Ruiz fans, set out and in his honor went to all these restaurants, and no matter, mostly like things that either emulated things that were Chef Ruiz's favorites or the actual restaurants that were his favorite, and ordered his favorite items. And then on the receipt, they would write hashtag keep Ruizing, and then would leave a really large tip for the for the waiters and waitresses in his memory and in his honor, which I thought was like just a really nice way to A, remember him, and B, kind of support the struggling restaurant industry.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, I think that's great. I think, you know, tipping is really important when it comes to like hospitality stuff. I worked coffee jobs all throughout college, and I understand, like, you make minimum wage, like your actual wage is going to be like whatever people tip you for the day. So yeah, I think it's great. I always encourage.
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about it because I remember going to a barbecue charity auction soon after he passed. And it's just, I love all sorts of traditions, no matter where you're from, like, you know, wholesome, like beautiful things to either remember people by, or, you know, cultural traditions. I may not be Mexican, but during Dia de los Muertos, I definitely put up an ofrenda because I have very old photos from like the 1930s of my grandmother in the house, right? So I'll put up the garland of marigolds up. And I really love that. And I just thought this was such a special way to remember him. And it's double duty, you know?
Right.
In this weird time.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, we're pouring one out for you today on the pod, Chef Carl Ruiz. And if you're out there, you can still keep his memory alive by doing the same thing. And with that, I think this is a lovely way to end Food News Update. Y'all should see Billy's face. It is still the morning over in front of him. And he's like, what the fuck is this guy doing? It's always a good time here, whether it's morning, noon, or late night on In Yo Mouth. And I want to go back because I mentioned that your partner, you're not married, correct?
No, we are. Yeah.
Oh, your husband. Is Esteban from Chicano Eats. And y'all, I have been following Chicano Eats forever. And I'm so surprised I didn't put two and two together because the aesthetic is somewhat similar.
Like adjacent.
Yeah, like parallel adjacent. I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. How long have you been together?
Tomorrow actually will be 10 years.
Yes. Happy anniversary.
Thank you.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Now, when you met, well, it's 10 years. That's 2010. Yeah, that works. When you met, were you both in the foodscape, food sphere, did you know you would be a food powerhouse?
I launched my blog in like 2008, I think. And he didn't launch his until 2015. So we had been together for a while before he started it. He had just been looking and watching like what I had done, what my friends were doing at the time, and was kind of like, oh, like I feel like I can do that. And there's a huge hole in the market for like a Mexican American food blog. There's not a ton of them. And so he was kind of just like, well, like I'll try it. Like, what's the worst that can happen? Like, it's not going to go anywhere, you know, like whatever. And so I helped him sort of figure out aesthetic wise, like what he really likes, and helped him like figure out lighting and everything else. And it's pretty much like lighting wise, everything along the same lines. And then it differs with either color palettes or styling or, you know, other things like that.
It's really beautiful. It's both of yours are just really, really beautiful. And, you know, we might as well plug the Instagram now and later, right? Just, you know, while you're passively listening to this podcast, go open your Instagram and go to @wit, W-I-T, and vinegar, and check out what we're talking about. And it's beautiful. And then go support the husband, too, @ChicanoEats.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. Now, what made you decide? Because your style is both of your styles, but your style specifically is very specific. Like, I don't really see anybody doing like what you're doing out there. What made you decide like this is going to be the style? Where did that come from?
It was like this whole sort of weird like cocktail of things where like I was sort of doing the blog for a while. I got the email from the publisher to work on a cookbook. And they said, we really love like your bright, like poppy, like sort of, they were calling it pop art, photography. They're also from the UK. So their terminologies were a little different. And it was weird when they reached out and they were saying these things because I didn't really feel like my site was that, I was just kind of using like fun colors, I guess, for backgrounds. And I wasn't doing like traditional styling or anything like that in terms of props. So they were like, we love your bright, colorful, fun photography. And I said, okay. And we kind of went from there to do a book. And I realized as I was shooting the book and starting to shoot the book, I wanted to go in these realms that I sort of play with now a little bit more with like materials and textures and surfaces. But that like wasn't what they wanted. They wanted like strictly color backgrounds. So I sort of figured out a way. And from there, that's kind of where the style evolved from just like sort of weird, fun, like color, like bright, contrasty photos. And it sort of evolved into like finessing it over the years and getting it to where it is today. But then now I get to have like a little bit more fun with, you know, I'll grab fabrics or other colors or different reflective surfaces and kind of play with those as well, to kind of switch it up a little bit. But yeah,
do you have a name? Have you like named your style?
No, I just kind of do whatever. Cause there are days when I want to do like the same thing, you know? And then there are other days where I'm like, oh, I want to have like a little bit of fun with this. I want to do, you know, whatever, you know, I want to manipulate it or do whatever.
Do you have like a large closet or is your house like massive that you have like storage for all sorts of like foils and plates and all like the food styling?
Yeah. Things? We've got like, we've got one of our rooms that was supposed to be our room that we shot in. We moved up here to buy a house specifically last year because we were running out of space in our apartment in Southern California. And we thought we had moving into a bigger house would solve our problems. But somehow, like, the stuff didn't, like, now it feels like it takes up more room. I don't know. It's, like, really bizarre. So we have like a room dedicated to kind of basically just props. So like all of our lighting equipment, all of our props, we've got like a ton of bookshelves in there. They're all stacked up on doing those things. And then of course, like we'll still use like the same, we have like 5 or 6 go-tos that we between, you know, he has some and I have some. And so we don't use all the props all the time as much as we used to. But sometimes we have commercial clients that we don't post on our Instagram or social media for whatever reason. And we do need different props for them. So we kind of, and we live in Fresno, so we don't really have like a prop house like you would normally have in LA or New York for rentals. So we sort of have to build up our own sort of toolkit here to kind of do those things with.
I'm imagining like a really pretty, like Martha Stewart, like wallpapered color, you know, like the pink plates are with the pink plates and the white plates are with the white plates and the glass, you know, the mercury glass is in this corner.
I would very much like it to be that way, but it's not. It's just literally like a ton of like Billy IKEA bookshelves sort of all over the room. And they're just like, glasses go on this one and plates and bowls go on this one.
Wait a minute. I love that the IKEA shelves are also named Billy.
Yeah.
Were you like, yeah. Esteban, they're named after me. These are the shelves we're getting.
Well, before any of that, when we lived in SoCal, our stuff was kind of just like stacked all over the place. There was no like organization to it. And we just kept getting like more and more props, depending on if we like worked with a company that was like a cookware company and they'd send us stuff or, you know, all these other things. And so it started to get like out of hand. And so I was like, we need to get something. And like the cheapest option at the time for us was the IKEA bookshelves because, you know, yeah. It's IKEA. And they're still the cheapest, but they're built really great and they do the job and they get the job done. So
yeah, not IKEA, not a sponsor. I want to switch gears really for a moment here, just because I have been on the most fabulous journey over the past year, just, you know, being the custodian of our stories, giving a platform for people to tell their stories, because our stories as LGBTQ people matter, especially in this day and age. And although your specific Instagram isn't necessarily attached to your identity as a gay man, a lot of my previous guests, right, they're very, you know, queer forward and this and that, and you're just more about the food and so on and so forth. But I would love to hear about your story, your coming out, your coming up, and what that was like.
Yeah, it was basically just like this sort of standard, like, kid who grew up in, like, a Christian household, but not super strict Christian. You know, we were, like, just, like, evangelical, not, like, the crazy speaking in tongues evangelicals, but just, like, the regular, like, Christian household, you know, a kid, like, I have a brother and a sister, grew up lower middle class, didn't have a ton of money. And I mean, growing up, like, you don't really have, I mean, it's totally different now. And like going back to like the whole internet thing, like being gay and like being like a gay teenager in like the year 2000 is just like a world of difference to being gay, like in so many aspects. Just the internet, I think, has opened up so many more windows and doors and eyes for kids to see like what's out there, because, you know, growing up, you're sort of limited to like what you see on TV and like what your parents tell you. And we didn't have any sort of like queer representation growing up. So, you know, like I remember being a kid and like the gay representation that I would see on TV would be like, did you ever watch Next on MTV?
Yes. and they'd have the gay guy go on the date.
They would have like the gay bus and it would be like, so, and it would always be like four of just like the most like raging, like Abercrombie queens of just like, you know, the year 2000, where everyone's wearing like a fucking puka shell necklace with a pop collar on their polo shirt, jeans and flip flops. And it was like literally a cookie cutter thing where you look at that and you go, oh, well, I guess that's what a gay person is. You know what I mean? Like, and they were always like so bitchy to each other and like so mean. And it was just like, looking back now, I laugh and like I watch it and I think it's just so funny and ridiculous. But you're sort of, that's what we had growing up. So growing up, I definitely knew I was attracted to boys growing up. That was like 100%. But the issue is going to church where you have not necessarily your parents as an influence, but the church itself as an influence. So, you know, I remember very specifically being in like youth group and having like our youth group teacher, we had a talk one night and it was like about how like society wants us to like tolerate different groups, but like the Bible tells us that we don't have to tolerate those groups, and like gays being one of them. It was like this whole thing. And I just remember like, whoa, like that's like, it was like that thing where you just like would pray that you weren't attracted to boys because it was wrong. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think if I grew up with the internet, I would have been completely different, 100%. But I waited. I was like, I didn't come out until I was 21. And the weird thing is like, I knew my mom would be okay with it. You know, like that wasn't a question. Like I told her and she was like, okay, like I kind of knew, but, thanks for, you know, like letting me know. And it was like the same, you know, and I think it was also the thing too, where like her reaction was very much like, also didn't have any education on it, you know? So her thing was kind of just like, the only thing she knew about gay people was like AIDS, you know? So it's like, she would just be like, just be safe and, don't have sex with strangers, you know, just like that was her reaction, you know, but she was fine with it besides that. And once that happened, it kind of was like a relief, you know? I came out to her, I came out to my brother and my sister at the same time. And like, that was pretty much it. And, you know, and then I sort of came out to anyone else that was important to me, like over text message. And
yes, over text message.
Yeah, that was like it, you know, like
I did not even have that luxury. But oh, wow. I mean, listen, each and every one of our stories is unique and important. And I always say that you never know who's listening and who it may affect or may inspire. So I want to thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
With me and the audience, because it's important. It's absolutely important to see normal people, tangible people, such as you and I, you know, thriving, succeeding, and that aren't, you know, the RuPauls or the, you know, like, you know, the Carson Kressleys. I don't know.
Yeah,
why
I can't think there's like
people.
I think it's like the characters of what we had growing up is like what we had to look up to, you know? And there's nothing wrong, obviously, with like anybody being any kind of gay. Like, that's not the issue. But I think it, like how you're saying, it's sort of the tangible, attainable thing where you're just like,
yeah, that we're not this cookie cutter, or that this gay people are just this one thing. We are diverse. We do everything. We are in every field. We are thriving in almost every field, I would imagine. And it's real, albeit that this podcast is all food focused, right? But this is our passion. This is what we do. And this is where we thrive. And this is where we influence. And you are indeed influencing, you know? Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And that's beautiful. And that is beautiful. And speaking of your influence, you know, before we close out here, tell the kids about your book, right? Because he has a book, a cookbook out there.
I do, but it's not, you don't have to buy it. It doesn't really like exist anymore. They basically did like one small printing of it and then stopped. It was like a really sort of tumultuous experience. Like, doing a cookbook is like, I think a lot of people look at it and they're like, oh my God, I have to do that, or I want to do that, or it's so much fun. And it's like legit one of the most labor intensive things you could ever do. It was definitely like the hardest thing I had ever done. My husband just published his cookbook at the end of June. So I had like minor like PTSD, like working with him on, you know, deadlines and just like full shoot days and just everything for that. But it's a lot of work. So yeah, definitely go and buy. You can buy my husband's book, 100%.
Yes. We have to get him on the pod. We'll plug him and the book too.
Yeah.
Come on, we'll talk. It'll be great.
Yeah. You can buy his cookbook. It's Chicano Eats, the same name as his site. And yeah, you don't have to buy mine. I don't think it exists anymore. So I don't think that's an issue. But yeah, it was a lot of work going into it. And it would have been nice to have someone to talk to or to go through it with me that had also already gone through it, because I think that makes a huge difference in the whole process.
Yeah. Yeah, I've often considered it myself, and then I'm like, oh, this seems like so much. And so that's also refreshing to hear from you as well. So what's next? What's next on the docket?
I don't know. Just kind of still doing the same thing, seeing where how COVID sort of plays out, how that's sort of going. A lot of my work is based around campaigns and advertisements. So it was really slow for me for several months because, you know, people weren't paying for advertisements anywhere, like
yeah.
creating content or doing any of that stuff. So
yeah, even Arby's recycled a commercial.
Yeah.
And blurred, did you see that? And
yeah, blurred, they blurred one of them out.
Yeah, blurred whatever yeah. sandwich was out. And they were like, yeah. ignore the blur. We didn't have a budget for a new commercial. So we just blurred out the stuff that yeah. doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah. And it's like, and a lot of my stuff revolves around food. So it was like when COVID started, you know, grocery stores were selling out of everything. So a lot of brands were just like, we don't have to pay for advertising. Obviously, like nobody has an option. They have to kind of pick whatever's in the store. So luckily that's sort of ramping back up. So like work is sort of happening again. But besides that, nothing crazy or major planned for the next several months.
All right. Well, I mean, how much planning can we do really when we're all, yeah. when we're all stuck at home? But I love that you have given me so much of your time today. It was such a joy to connect. I love, I always say I'm building a big gay food army, you know, but they've been calling me the Andy Cohen of food these days. And I'm trying to figure out a Real Housewives reference and I can't, right? It hasn't come together like my real food wives of the airway. I don't know. It'll come to me and you are definitely part of it, part of the army, right. part of the family. And I just so appreciate your time and like your story and just everything that you've shared with us today. So thank you so much.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It was fun.
Yeah, this has been a great time. You know, it's the end of September, y'all. We are, you know, just fast tracking, speed bulleting. I don't even know what's wrong with me today. We are just on our way really quickly. And before we know it, I'm telling you, it's going to be Christmas. And there's something I've been keeping in my back pocket for a while that I still can't tell you about till for another month or so. That's really, really exciting. So, you know, stay tuned for that. Once again, lots of love and thanks to Billy Green of Wit and Vinegar. Please go follow him on the Instagrams at Wit and Vinegar. Or you can go to his website, witandvinegar.com, to see all the recipes and the beautiful photos because they are so extraordinary and exquisite. I love them. And you know what? After, what else can I say? Wear a mask, wash your hands, and thank you for listening to In Yo Mouth.